My talk yesterday, I focused on one really strong commonality that is not present between the Native American spiritual tradition, which I spent about 5 years immersing myself in, and the Mahayana Zen Buddhist tradition. And that's the importance of the circle of life. And on my wall in back of me, for those of you who can see me, there's an enso, a circle that was done by Kaz Tanahashi. And my teacher, Suzuki Roshi, would practice the circle. Katagiri Roshi did too. Katagiri Roshi had very good calligraphy, very beautiful calligraphy. The circle. So in Native American spirituality, specifically in Lakota spirituality, which I studied with a Lakota teacher, and this is Lakota. Today, Makaska was where the Lakotas had a village in the 1840s and 50s. The pipe. The pipe is a symbolic of the circle because we're in this, the pipe itself, we put tobacco and we fill it up with as much tobacco as we can. We put all the species in the world in tobacco because they're part of the circle. So, and when we carry the pipe, we try not to spill the species out because they like being in the circle. This is a circle of all life. So we like them. They like us. So we try to take care of it. And Black Elk said, the life of a man is a circle from childhood to childhood, and so it is in everything where power moves. Our teepees were round like nests of birds, and these were always set in a circle. The nation's hoop, a nest of many nests, where the Great Spirit meant for us to hatch our children. But the whites put us in these square boxes. Our power is gone. And I talked yesterday about the cosmic mudra, the circle. If we're doing traditional practice, we keep our hands in the cosmic mudra, in the circle. Generation after generation, we've done that. We don't kick anybody out of the circle. You may think you're bad. Your practice is no good. You're right in the middle of the circle anyway. You may think you should live in a country where they take better care of coronavirus. I think that. But we're in this circle. We're in this circle, and it's got a little opening. We don't jam our thumbs together, just like the enso has a little opening. So it's a fluid circle. It's a spiral circle. It's an open circle. And Dogen refers to it three-dimensionally, as I was talking yesterday about when he talks about one bright pillar. Here's Dogen. When the whole body is completely exposed, there is not one hindrance. It is completely round. There are no corners. It rolls smoothly. So how do we bring the circle alive in our lives? That's what I talked about yesterday also. And I talked about meditation prayer in the Buddhist tradition and in the Lakota tradition and how similar they are as one way of bringing the circle alive in our being, regardless of whether we're in the coronavirus or we don't have access to Zoom, I guess, decided to Zoom away from us just when we were doing our best kazen. So poor me, I had to go down and reopen the New York Times. But now I'm getting to be back here with you. So I talked about that yesterday, meditating and praying as if our life depended on it. Our life depends on this. If we can manifest the circle, if we can feel the circle and manifest it, our life goes pretty well, even in a pandemic, because we feel connected to others. We feel connected to others' pain and others' joy and others' confusion. And so we're not caught anymore. We're just part of this big circle of wonderful being, wonderful life. So the ways I'm going to talk about today, I talked about meditation and prayer yesterday. Today I'm going to talk about four other ways in the Mahayana Zen Buddhist tradition and in Native American traditions, specifically the Lakota, in which we bring the circle alive. Sacred space, touching the earth, realizing, practicing inner being, and helping others. So first of all, sacred space. Here is a Lakota prayer. Great mystery. My inner knowing, the senses of my body, the blessings of my spirit. Great mystery. Teach me to trust these things so that I may enter my sacred space and love beyond my fear and thus walk in balance with the passing of each glorious sun. So we mark the candle off as sacred space. We enter the zendo. We got shown. We mark our seats off as sacred space. We go to our seat. We gosho again. At home, here in this pandemic, how can we mark off sacred space for ourselves? I wonder what that is. How can we mark off sacred spaces for ourselves? How can we create quiet environments where we move into them? It's kind of easy to go to our cushion, sit on our cushion, because we have maybe an altar, maybe a Buddha statue, maybe a picture of some teacher, maybe some flowers. Marking our sacred space is an important way to bring the circle alive in our lives. And when I did the session and my teacher, Emma Running, called the Alpha or Vision 5, 4 days and four nights on a hill. They mark the sacred space, I mark the sacred space with tobacco ties, a circle, and I couldn't go outside that circle for 4 days and four nights. Of course, nobody knew. I could cheat if I wanted. Why cheat? Why cheat? Something good. I only went out of the circle for those 4 days and 4 minutes when I had to pee. I closed the circle back and made up tobacco ties, which each tobacco tie includes different species. So you're symbolical, different species of beings. So symbolical. So we have our way of doing it. It's important to do it. It's important to do it so that we can feel stillness in a sacred space, and then that can emanate out and we can feel sacredness in other spaces. But if we don't have a sacred space, it's very hard for the mind to just settle in. And Native Americans say that the sacred space is the space between the in-breath and the out-breath. Well, that kind of sounds like Zen, doesn't it? The space between the in-breath and the out-breath. And when I teach in-breath meditation, which I don't do very much anymore, I teach paying attention to the space between and surrounding each thought. Regardless of how fast the thought is going, there's space between them. And that's spacious. That means stillness. It doesn't matter. When the Lakotas say the space between the in-breath and the out-breath,
it's on.
And then what happens? The eye falls away in our sacred space, and we fall into our natural way of being, which doesn't kick out the eye. It includes the eye. It's just huge because it includes our affection for everything and everyone. So that we can call that in Zen, we call that releasing ego. Ego thinks it's independent, when it's really interdependent within the circle of life. And so the Lakota teacher says, I may enter my sacred space and love beyond my fear. I may walk in balance with the passing of each glorious sun. So spirituality, referred to as heaven, and physicality referred to as earth, when they're in balance, there's harmony, both in Buddhism and in the Lakota way. Harmony between heaven and earth, between body and mind, between spirit and mind in harmony. And when they're in harmony, that's heart-mind. We have one word in Buddhism, citta in Sanskrit, or shin in Japanese for heart-mind. Heart-mind, right here, the circle, right here, emanating out. Just as we are. We don't need to do anything. Just as we are, emanating out. So that's the sacred space, creating sacred space, maintaining sacred space. The second way of manifesting this wonderful circle of life, manifesting and experiencing and living it. The second one is touching the earth, learning from the earth. And here is Chief Luther standing there. There is a road in the hearts of all of us, hidden and seldom traveled, which leads to an unknown secret place. The old people came to love the soil, and they sat or lay on the ground with a feeling of being close to a mothering power. The old Indian still sits upon the earth instead of propping himself up and away from the life which gives him force, power, and love. For him, to sit or lie upon the ground is to be able to think more deeply and to feel more keenly. He can see more clearly into the mysteries of life and come closer into kinship to other lives about him. In touch with our true nature, just touching earth, just touching earth. Right now, if your butt is on the cushion, if your feet are on the floor, you're touching earth. You're touching earth. Many of you have read research on this. Research on being close to nature, touching earth, being close to nature. Research is really clear. More well-being, less pain, reduced stress and tension, and improved immune function. So here in this coronavirus, we have a great opportunity to touch the earth every day. We aren't distracted by all these other things. Well, maybe you are, but you don't need to be. You're forced to shelter in place, so the place can extend to maybe the leg, maybe just walking on the sidewalk, maybe gardening in your backyard. Touching the earth, because when you touch the earth, you feel something. You feel something that you don't need to understand, but that feels intimate. Feels intimate. Again, Chief Luther standing here. There is a road in the hearts of all of us, hidden and seldom traveled, which leads to an unknown secret place. Your Buddha nature, your still nature, your God nature, the great mystery, right here, right here. Wow, are we looking? Right here, right here. And here's Dogen. To see mountains and rivers as they are is experiencing the Buddha nature. To behold the Buddha nature is to observe a donkey's jaw and a horse's mouth. This wind and this rain, this daily living, this study and practice, this evergreen pine and ever unbreakable bamboo, all things themselves are ultimate reality. Touching earth. Here's the Ute prayer. Teach me, earth, teach me quiet, as the grasses are still with new light. Earth, teach me suffering, as old stones suffer with memory. Earth, teach me humility, as blossoms are humble with beginning. Earth, teach me caring, as mothers nurture their young. Earth, teach me courage, as the tree that stands alone. Earth, teach me limitation as the plant that crawls on the ground. Earth, teach me freedom as the eagle that soars in the sky. Earth, teach me acceptance as the leaves that die each fall. Earth, teach me renewal as a seed that rises in the spring. Earth, teach me to forget myself as melted snow forgets its life. Earth, teach me to remember kindness as dry fields weep with rain. Being grounded in the present. The coronavirus is giving us more opportunity to be grounded in the present. Have you noticed that? Because you don't know what's going to happen. Now you can just speculate and project and worry, but here, you don't know. You're sheltering in place. You're in your own monastery where we emphasize just being here, just doing this activity, and then doing another activity within this huge circle, touching the earth. And this retreat that we've been doing, just like our meditation, is about minimizing our stories about past and future, taking off the clothing of past and future. It's scary to take off those layers of self. We can do it. We can take them off. And touching the earth helps us. Touching the earth. Our bare feet on the ground, touching the ground, we feel so. Giving up the task that we normally clothe ourselves in make us a little anxious in the coronavirus, but this is our opportunity. This is our wonderful opportunity to shed a few layers of clothes, a few layers of before and after brooding and planning and wishing. Just shut a few so we can touch the earth and open up to this huge circle. So supposedly, Buddha meditated beneath the Bodhi tree. And supposedly Mara? Mara is the bad guy. Mara is the equivalent of the devil in Buddhism. He's not exactly a devil. Mara pointed and demanded. This is toward the end when Buddha was sitting for the last few days. Mara said, "Who witnesses your right to the seat of enlightenment?" Buddha reached a finger down to touch the ground, and he said, "I call earth as my witness." There are different versions of this, but he's in all the different versions, he's touching the ground. Sometimes he's not saying, "I call earth as his witness," but he's just doing it. Saying it is fine, but doing it connects us to something huge. Another account says that when Buddha said, "I call earth as my witness," the earth goddess emerged halfway from earth. She emerged halfway to support Buddha, remaining rooted in his stable, imperturbable posture. We have this stable, imperturbable posture, even if we swing a little bit, even if we have aches and pains, even if we have to get up and stretch our legs, we can still keep this imperturbability because it's not something created. It's something before we create stuff. So primal. And we have a bodhisattva in Buddhism. Shitigarbha Bodhisattva, Jiso Bodhisattva, Earth Womb Bodhisattva. She is the guardian of travelers and weak in Japan. In Japan, Katagiri Roshi used to say that people who are traveling and all people who are having some infirmity kept little Jiso Bodhisattva statues to help them, connect with earth and the power that comes from it. We also call that the womb of Buddha, the earth, the womb of Buddha, our own womb, not somebody else's womb, this womb. Even if there's agitation, even if there's upsetness, even if there's depression, still it's here. It's here. So we trust ourselves to the ground when we sit on it. We trust ourselves to the ground when we walk on it. We trust ourselves to the practice of meditation and just living together. Let our self body be held by Mother Earth. Just surrender to it. We don't have to surrender to some guru or some deity. We just got the earth. And when we surrender to earth, we feel the circle. We just feel it. Maybe you say to yourself, I've got to practice harder to know the circle. But let it enter me. I've got to do this. But you can't do it. Can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do yourself into a state of calm. All you can do is set up the conditions for the circle to come alive in your heart. Set up the conditions. One condition I talked about yesterday is meditation, prayer. The other is creating sacred space. And the third is touching the earth. The earth has a lot to teach if you just listen to it. A lot to teach. So now I'd like to move to the next one, inner being. Inner being. I'm using Thich Nhat Hanh's word. I like Thich Nhat Hanh's word, inner being. Fourth way in which we settle into realize that we're already supported by this. Realize that the circle never kicks anybody out. Even a ball weevil doesn't get it. Ball weevil is an essential importance, and we can love it if we get to the ball, our own ball weevil nature. You might think, oh, I have a ball weevil nature. Well, I never get in life. I don't think so. A ball weevil. Enlightenment is very deep, very deep. It's not trying to be someone special. It's just what it is. It's just what it is. So inner being, or in Lakota, we say Metakyasin, all my relatives. We gasho in Zen, gasho, or we're joining the palms together. We're joining ourself with others, ourself with our cushion, ourself with the room. That's what the gasho is. We're joining together and opening up to that circle. And there's no bowing in Lakota tradition, but every ritual, every retreat, every late night ceremony begins by people saying Metakyasin, all my relatives. And this means all the relatives. This means the plants and animals and boll weevils. And Dogen was very clear about this when he said, all beings are sentient beings. You know, there's a thing in Buddhism that sentient beings can attain enlightenment. Well, Dogen said, what about the grasses? What about the stones? They're sentient. They're alive. They have their own enlightenment. Just be with them. Don't kick them out of the circle. They have wonderful teaching. So Buddha supposedly reached that finger down to touch the ground, and he was sitting under the he said, I call earth as my witness, or maybe he didn't say anything at all. And he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, the broad, stable trunk of the Bodhi tree with roots deep in the earth. You go to India, you see these ficus, I guess ficus or ficus, I don't know how you pronounce it. Ficus? Ficus trees? Huh? Ficus. Ficus religiosa. I just knew it was the Bodhi tree, but Ficus religiosa in India, those trees are really big and they give a lot of shade. They have deep roots. The Buddha was sitting there and it was supporting him. The earth was supporting him, and the tree whose trunk was just still and steady and whose roots went way into the earth. Your roots go way into the earth, just as you are. Can you feel that rootedness right here? Right here in your room? Can you feel that? If not, after this is over, go outside. You know, it's not raining now. Maybe it is now. Wait till it stops raining. Go outside. Take your shoes off. Put your feet in the earth. It's always here supporting us. It's always here. Anyway, inner being. Black Elk says, and while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw, for I was seeing in a sacred manner the shapes of things in the spirit, and the shape of all shapes as they must live together as one being. Seeing more than he can tell, letting go of being clothed in shoulds and should nots, regrets and fears and worries and agitation. Not clothed in that anymore. Just letting those clothes fall away. We may need them later, but you don't need them now. You're just sitting listening to my talk. You don't need any of them. Now, maybe later today you pick up the New York Times again. I would probably do that. I'll need some. Well, then I can put them on for a while. But they're just clothes. Just clothes. So engagement. This is what we're doing. We touch the earth. We engage. Engagement, we don't know. I know you like to know. But if things are certain, we know, we tend to be less engaged. Do you know what I mean? Things are certain. You've got it figured out. You're doing this. You're doing that. You're doing that. And you forget your connection. So engagement, we don't know. We're open to the great mystery. We don't know. That's kind of deep, don't knowing, but you just take off the superficial layers of don't knowing and go deep don't knowing. And you just engage. You're just engaging here. I don't know how many of you can even hear me or see me. I only see a few of you. Well, I'm just engaging in any way I can to reach out to you and show you the love that we as two-leggeds have for each other, as two-leggeds and for four-leggeds and for eight-leggeds and for no-leggeds. The same love. Because inner being. It's inner being. Mind and heart come into their natural balance on their own. Hard mind. Here's Chief Seattle. Humankind has not woven the web of life. And I'd like to ask everybody to mute, because I am hearing a lot of cracking going on. And if you all mute your phones, maybe I'm hearing the cracking that the other people are hearing. Mute your phones. Here's oh, it's still cracking. Well, that's okay. That's part of the circle. Well, what an auditory expression of the circle. Chief Seattle says, humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to someone else, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect. So yesterday I was talking about Dogen's One Bite Girl. Stan, Lisa Stan, the guy from the oyster, just stay still. Some Stan is going to feed your oyster coronavirus and no coronavirus. And of course you want to take it out. This is still. Then what happens? This covers it. It just grows. A beautiful pearl-like casing, which Dogen refers to as one bright pearl, which he got from a Chinese master. We think Dogen is the end-all, but he was very well-read in the Chinese classics. And he is always quoting these teachers, but he never references them. He never any footnotes. His wisdom is great, but he's been on since the beginning of time. It's nothing new. You can hear me with all this crap. Can you still hear me? Let me see. Raise your hand if you can hear me. Oh, some of you.
It's really, really hard to hear.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's cracking. Does somebody muted, unmuted, who can mute?
It's not working.
It's not working. Oh, okay. Well,
If you've dialed in, I think star six might mute you.
What did you say?
If you dialed in, I think star six on your phone pad will mute you, I think.
Oh, did you? So we're getting some instruction from my technical expert. He says, say that again, Paul.
If you're on a phone, I think star six will mute your phone. Well, it seemed to work.
Okay, well, I'll just keep talking and let the universe keep cracking. Why not? So the sand and the oyster. That cracking is the sand and the oyster. You want to kick that piece of sand out, but it just keeps cracking. Can you just be with it? Can you just breathe into it? Just be with it. One by pearl. Right here, one by pearl, cracking or no cracking. But the sand has to be really still. If you try to kick it out, no pearl, no pearl. Just be still, just be still. And the sand keeps still in the oyster. At some point, you realize, Bodhisattva. Svaha means great joy, and Bodhi means awake. You feel the pearl right here at the center of your being, that great pearl. Inner being, we embrace everything that arises, good, bad, right, wrong. We wake up to Buddha nature, to great mystery, to groundless ground. We wake up. We put our burden down. We're so burdened with trying to get the sand out of the oyster. Such a burden. But if you just are with it, if you just breathe, if you just watch it, if you just take care of it with some TLC that's not separate from you, one bright pearl, one bright pearl, one bright pearl. Then we open up to the circle. And we're not closed off from it. Even when we're closed off from the circle, it's not closed off from us. Our closed offness is still part of the circle. Still part of the circle, our closed offness. We're just protecting ourselves. We're just going a little, just have a little more solid shell of protection because we're scared. But even in that fear, we can still grow the pearl inside us. Still take care of the sand inside us. We can keep the shell hard and take care of all our fears in this pandemic, but still feel the shell. Still let the shell be. It has a great teaching. But its teaching doesn't say much of anything. It's the whole circle of life. It's the whole circle. It says a lot of things, but ultimately it just shows us how to be alive and at peace with cracking the pandemics, or whatever. So here's Sun Bear. I do not think the measure of a civilization is how tall its buildings concrete how well its Zoom works. I added that. I do not think the measure of a civilization is how tall its buildings are or how well its Zoom works, but rather how well its people have learned to relate to their environment and fellow humans. That's what we're doing. All my relatives. That's what we're doing, relating to each other. My relatives. Right within the cracking. Relating to the cracking. Including it, opening up to it, moving through it. All beings, 10 directions, 3 worlds. All beings, 10 directions, 3 worlds. End of all of our chains, that's how we end them all. All beings, 10 directions, 3 worlds. The world of the past, the world of the present, the world of the future. The cardinal directions, the in-between directions, and the earth and the sky. if this isn't Native American teaching, what is? The Native Americans must have been hanging out with Dogon, although they were 600 years apart on different continents. All beings, 10 directions, 3 worlds, together, supporting each other, taking care of each other. We don't know anything. Just engage, engage. Still, even though it feels like an abrasive piece of sand, it's nothing more or less than a bright pearl. I went to Bhutan maybe 15 years ago to do Buddhist practice. And how I ended up in Bhutan rather than Japan is a whole other story, and I don't have time to tell that story now. But I went there and I made arrangements as a Buddhist priest to go stay in a place called Tiger's Nest that I had to hike up to a monastery on a cliff in Bhutan. While I was in Bhutan, I had a guide. You weren't allowed to go to Bhutan without a guide in those days. Still weren't. But then when I got to hike up to Tiger's Nest and be with the monks, I got my guide didn't have to stay with me. That was cool. That was wonderful. At that time, the king of Bhutan, and I think this is the old king, I think he was stepping down. The young king is trying to develop democracy. I don't know how that's working. But anyway, this was maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago. The old king, Jigme Singye Wangchuk, said, and the guide told me this. He said, we have no TV here. Now I understand they have lots of TV, but they had no TV. We have no TV. He said, we are steeped in Buddhist teaching. And I said, yes, that's why I'm here, to practice with you. And he looked at me like I was a little strange, because most people who were on the tours were. I said, yes, I'm hiking up to Tiger's Nest to practice. He said, oh, good. Anyway, he said, you have GDP. He said, we have GNH. We have gross national happiness. You have gross domestic product. Gross domestic product is linear. Gross national happiness is circular. Inner being. Gross domestic product is fine to a point, but only to a point. Gross national happiness. Protects us for happiness. So here's Sunbear again. I do not think the measure of a civilization is how tall its buildings of concrete are, or its Zoom works, but rather how well its people have learned to relate to their environment and fellow humans. E pluribus unum. Now, 1776. There must have been some Buddhists there. 1776, when the country was founded, e pluribus unum. Out of many, one. Why I'm teaching? I don't know. I'd have to research that. And then they put it on the seal. Now I'm going to do a long quote from Black Elk. Let's see, am I getting, how much do I have to do here? No, not too much. It's about 45 minutes, probably another 5 minutes. I don't know, something like that. So let's see here. Oh, a Black Elk. The first piece, which is the most important, is that when our mind joins our heart. In other words, heart-mind. In other words, the mind not just getting off and trying to control the body, but just coming back to heart-mind. The mind is always trying to control or get the body to shape up or get other bodies to shape up or something. Heart-mind, right here, bring it back. We used to say, we used to play hide and go seek when we were kids, and we'd say, ollie, ollie, oxen free, come back, come back. So that's, maybe that used to be my mantra when my mind would go off, ollie, ollie, oxen free. I grew up in the 50s. Maybe you don't say that anymore. I'm an old guy. So the first piece, said Blackwell, is the most important. It's that when our mind joins our heart, when they realize their relationship, their oneness with the universe and all its powers. And they realize that at this center, that this center is really everywhere. At this center dwells the great mystery, and it's within each of us. This is the road of peace, and the others are but reflections of this. So we light up this tiny little corner of the world that we have during this pandemic, wherever you're sitting. We light it up by just being here, just breathing, not trying to go anywhere, not trying to be a good meditator, just being here. We light it up. And if we light it up, run by pearl, the whole universe lights up. It just happens. There's nothing to do except just be with it, take care of it, open to it. Then he goes on to say, the second piece is that which is made between two individuals. And the third is that which is made between two nations. But above all, you should understand that there can never be peace between nations until there is known that true peace, which, as I have often said, is within the souls of men, within the soul nature, the no soul nature, the Buddha nature of men and women and plants and animals. This center is really everywhere, is within each of us, says Black Elk. So Black Elk talks about one of his vision cries. He did many retreats, many vision cries. I only did one, but he did many. Well, actually, if I get to call on my sesshins, then I guess I get to call them. I've done lots and lots and lots. Lots and lots, because I don't see the difference. On the third day of his vision cry, he says, I realized how precious water was, how most people didn't understand. Oh, and I want to say that when you do a vision cry, you don't get to eat or drink. You don't get to have water. I said to my friend Paul the other day, we did that 4 days and four nights, and that was without food and water when we were young. He said, yeah, it was. And I said, well, that's dangerous, isn't it? I said, I wouldn't attempt that. He said, well, I wouldn't either. I don't know how old we were. We did it. Anyway, that's part of it. That's part of it because you're letting go of your bringing material into your body so you can cleanse your body and open up and feel part of all life. And actually, in Buddhism, you'll find that lots of teachers who went on fasts. Lots and lots of teachers. But anyway, I'm supposed to be done in 5 minutes. I'm supposed to be done in 2 minutes, so I'm going to go on. On the third day, I realized how precious water was, how most people didn't understand. They could just go into a store or restaurant or turn on a faucet. But the trees and plants and four-leggeds can't do that. Every time we throw away water, we are depriving a tree and plant of it. Then his vision ended with the sight of the whole world as one, the hoops of many nations united in one hoop, with one mighty tree sheltering everyone as the children of one father and one mother. And he was then instructed to go back and restore his people. And after that, he had a very different attitude toward water, a very different attitude toward nature. And it reminds me of Dogen. Dogen, when he founded a Heiji monastery, he found a little rivulet. And I haven't been to a Heiji monastery, but which turned into a stream. And every time he would cross the stream, He had a little hand bridge. He would scoop his water because they had no pumps from the stream, and then he would put up a half dipper back. So it's called, it's at a hedge, you know, I've not been there, and it's called the half dipper bridge. And when you cross the bridge, you're instructed, at least so I'm told, to take some water. And if you want, if you're thirsty, drink it and then put a half dipper back. So that's all my relatives, isn't it? That's all my relatives. The water is our relative. If we take care of us, it takes care of us. So that's inner being, isn't it? Inner being. Inner being. So that's the third way that I'm talking about today. The fourth way being, I talked about yesterday, of bringing the circle alive. The fourth way being prayer and meditation, which is the most important one, which is why we have 18 days of retreats a year. I've been upping the days, but I'm not upping it anymore. 18 days. We have 20 some days, but we expect the people who are priests in training to do 18 days. Excuse me, I got mixed up. But we've been upping it because we need to retreat so that we can discover this font of life within us, this font of life within us. And then the last way we manifest the circle, we live the circle, is to help others with kindness and courage. And after I did my vision quest, my vision cry with Elmer, he said, so in the old days, when you do a vision cry, you go up to the hill, you walk up the hill, your teacher walks up with you and leaves you there for so many days and so many nights, and then comes back to get you. And it's the amount of time is usually either 1, 2, 3, or 4 days. And I did 4 days, but now in the Lakotas, at least my Lakotas that I used to hang out with, they go up in their pickup trucks. They don't walk up there anymore. So they took me up in the pickup and then helped me set up the sacred space and then went down. And finally, at the end of the fourth day, I'm listening for the pickup. Will the pickup ever come? Have you ever been in a retreat? Have you ever been in a Zazen? When is Zazen ever going to end? When is that pickup going to come? And I'm mistaking the birds for the pickup. I'm mistaking the sound of the all kinds of things for the pickup. The pickup finally comes. Elmer finally comes. Picks me up, takes me down. And he said, did you have one of them visions of the great mystery? I said, yes, yes. I got teary, yes. Do you want to hear about it? He said, nope. A lot of people have them visions. Not very many people live them. That's all he said. Nope. A lot of people have them visions. Not many people live them. Helping others, kindness and courage. Helping others with kindness and courage. And my first teacher said, there are no enlightened people, only enlightened activity. Only enlightened activity. So here's Chief Tecumseh of the Shawnee tribe. Live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view and demand that they respect yours. Love your life, perfect your life, beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Always give a word or a sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger, when in a lonely place. Show kindness to all people and grovel to none. Abuse no one and no thing, for abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision. So I have many examples of this in being with my two Japanese teachers, Suzuki Roshi and Katagiri Roshi, but I'm reminded of when I was a young man living at the Zen monastery in California, Tassajara, and there was a young guy there who couldn't seem to get his act together. His name was David Chadwick. And I thought he was a young guy. I was 24. I don't know how old he was, younger than me. He seemed like a really young guy. He couldn't seem to get his act together. He overslept during Zazen. He lost his watch, so he didn't even know what Zazen was, although we told him, David, all you have to do is listen for the bells. He smoked dope behind the bathhouse. and the Eno wanted to kick him out. But he was very devoted to his teacher and to the practice, and Suzuki wouldn't kick him out. No. Instead of kicking him out, he called him in to have a Doksan with him. He got more Doksan. Doksan, but this is friendly Doksan. This is not Doksan. Friendly Doksan. But because Suzuki didn't give up on him, because he kept calling him in, David became, I would say, one of his most devoted disciples. And everything that has been written about Suzuki since his death, most of that stuff comes from David Chadwick. And David Chadwick has a website and a foundation, which I just donated to, dedicated to preserving the teachings of Suzuki. It's very beautiful, very wonderful. So serving others, helping others with kindness, but including ourselves as an other. You've got to, if yourself is another, include yourself. If you're othering yourself, I'm not good enough, then you've got to include. If you're not othering yourself, you don't have to include yourself as another. But so many people that I meet with, you're othering yourselves. Oh, that other of me, I'm yucca. No, serve that other. Serve that other. Help others with kindness and courage. Live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart, says the teacher. And then the teacher continues, the Lakota teacher. Or is this Lakota teacher? Who is it? Oh, no, it's a Shawnee teacher. When it comes to your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. So, the Kiowa warriors, the young warriors going out to battle. I live, but not forever. Grandmothers, you alone remain. I live, but not forever. Grandfathers, you alone remain. I live, but not forever. Grandmothers, you alone remain forever, forever, in the circle, forever, in the circle, right here, right here. And here's Gary Snyder. And Gary Snyder practiced Zen before all the rest of us did, and he's still alive practicing it. And he also hung out a lot with Native Americans. A lot with Native Americans, and wrote a lot about Native Americans. And he wrote a lot about Turtle Island, you know, which is what the Native Americans consider the American continent, Turtle Island. So here's Gary Snyder. I'm going to close with Gary Snyder because Gary Snyder, Dai Osho, he's a great teacher for me. Great teacher. Because when I was in college and I didn't want to go to classes, I read about him in Jack Kerouac's books. And then that made me think, oh, this Stanford, this sucks. My life changed ever after that. So, gosh, oh, to Gary Snyder. Here's Gary Snyder. They have, throughout Turtle Island, an ancient and clarified sense of what a right path is. And some of those societies, not all of them maybe, were actually living like a Zen monastery. And here's a poem of Gary's. I pledge allegiance to the soil of Turtle Island and to the beings who thereon dwell. Though all things and all beings are diverse and unique in their physical appearance and particular particle formation, they all share the same universe, and they are interconnected and interdependent in one whole ecological system. One ecosystem in diversity under the sun, with joyful interpenetration for all. And that's the end of my Dharma talk.